Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Spillers After Show Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dunn. Normally, the show's co-host is Robert Hochman Jr., who would be by my side, but he's not here right now, so I'm going to fly this thing solo and hope I don't crash into the Andes. We shall see. The Spillers After Show Podcast is just what it sounds like. It's a discussion and dissection of what happened at the most recent Spillers event, and Spillers is Phoenix, Arizona's only original short fiction reading event. And we had our most recent Spillers. It was Spillers 2 at Crescent Ballroom earlier this month. It was November 2nd, in fact. And we had six very talented local writers reading their original short fiction. The place was packed. It was fantastic. And just a quick note here, we actually just today got officially scheduled for Spillers number 3. So that'll be in early 2016, again at Crescent Ballroom on February 1st. That will also be a Monday night. And so what this podcast is about is just digging more into the stories at Spillers, the stories behind those stories, if you will, and the people behind the stories, if that makes sense. So I'm sitting down with one of the talented guys who read an original piece at Spillers 2. His name is Connor Rickett, and he read Coin Toss in a Diner. Robert and I read this prior to the show, and we both liked it immediately. We're going to be talking about that and why diners make such a wonderful setting for a short story. He's ghostwritten books, Connor has. He freelances like a crazy person. He has traveled the country in a Subaru, and I'm very happy to have him across the table from me. Connor, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be here, Brian.
Well, thanks very much. And how did you find out about Spillers 2? What was the process that you went through to decide, you know what, I'm going to submit to this thing. It looks pretty nifty. I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Well, I sat down next to your absent co-pilot at a writing group, and he suggested that I submit something.
Did he? Now, did he suggest that to everybody in the room, or did he just single you out and say, you know, I really think you should
do
something?
He singled me out. I don't know if he singled out everyone else in the room separately, but...
Okay. I'm guessing no.
Probably not.
All right.
I do know a number of people submitted to you guys, so...
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay, well, for everyone we did not accept, my apologies. I'll blame that on Robert since he's not here.
Right, do that.
Yeah, I definitely
will.
He's
our fall guy for the day.
Yeah, he's going to have to be. That's the cost of not showing up.
Seems fair.
Yeah, it does. No, he'll be here any second, I am sure. Okay, so let's talk about the story, Coin Toss in a Diner. For people who weren't at the event and didn't hear you... read it. Just give us a brief synopsis. What was that about?
Well, it's told from the perspective of a guy who's sort of an amateur philosopher. He's very into philosophication of things, but perhaps not the not truly a brilliant mind. But it's about
but attempting to be?
Attempting to be. You know,
sure.
He's trying to think and consider his situation, his lot in life, which is not fantastic. He's in a rundown diner doesn't have enough money to buy dessert.
Right.
And ends up, you know, flipping a coin for it with another guy. And, you know, it doesn't end well for one of them.
No, it does not end well. It does not end well at all, actually.
Well, really, it doesn't end well for either of them, but there's a definite winner in the situation, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, you could look at it that way. Okay, so do your stories normally have like a dark humor kind of a bent to them, would you say? I think it's had shades of that.
I try to mix it up a little bit. You know, you shouldn't try to pigeonhole yourself, especially when you're starting out. So, but this one definitely, that was an intention going into it, was to have a sort of not especially likable main character,
right,
but maybe,
right.
Maybe put him in the sort of situation where... you wouldn't really hate him because of the circumstance.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because a lot of people think that's a risk to have a not likable protagonist, but I'm all for it. Like, as far as I'm concerned, the protagonist just has to be interesting.
That's the key right there. Have someone who's interesting.
Yeah.
I actually liked him quite a bit. I thought he sounded not so much unlikable, but road weary.
Yeah, but he's also, you know, the sort of guy that finds a dead guy on the sidewalk and checks to see if there's any money left in his wallet, you know? So he's not necessarily the,
An
upstanding. So that begs the question, how much of that is autobiographical?
I would...
Have you ever taken anything off a dead guy?
I've never taken anything off a dead guy.
Not even that shirt?
You know, that's mean. That's mean.
No, it's not mean at all. No. I don't mean that in a bad way whatsoever.
Nothing says the dead guy can't have good taste.
That's right.
That's a good point. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. No, this coat was actually I stole this coat from my dad because it doesn't fit him anymore, and it's a really nice wool coat.
Yeah, it looks very comfy, very comfy. So, what was the reading process like for you? You know, before I get to that, you wrote a follow-up article on your website, Cities of the Mind, mm-hmm. right? We'll talk about that a little bit later. But you were very complimentary about Spillers, and you said something that was interesting that I think maybe not a lot of writers feel the same way, but you said that reading it was very natural to you, and it wasn't a nerves-type situation. You felt very comfortable. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, because of my background, I've done a lot of talking in front of crowds, so if there ever was anything scary about that to me, it's kind of...
It's dissipated?
It's kind of dissipated, yeah.
So what's your background then, where you've experienced that?
Well, my first job involved giving tours to hundreds of screaming children, and also I was like a live animal husbandry guy, so I had to give tours.
Live animal husbandry guy?
Yeah, like, so you had to, you know, hold a snake or a...
Was that part of the tour?
Yeah, you know, I worked in a natural history museum. That was my first job in high school. So my job was to essentially, like, tell kids about snakes while making sure the snake didn't bite them and the children didn't bite the snake. And
Right.
Yeah. Or if the snake did bite someone, that someone was me.
Sure.
So standing up in front of a crowd at that point is pretty easy. And then in college, I was involved in a lot of, like, PR and stuff for clubs like Engineers Without Borders at NAU. I was president of that and PR director for it and recruitment before that. So,
yeah.
Just, you know, it's
so you're
like,
pretty much unflappable.
Well,
is what you're saying.
It's like anything else. If you do it enough, you get used to it.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I think is an important thing for people who are nervous about getting up and, you know, reading their writing. If you do it enough, you're going to get used to it.
Yeah,
at some point,
exactly.
You're just going to be like, oh, this again. Okay.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I think
no
it might
problem.
Actually be easier. I'm curious about this. Do you find it easier when you're improvising or when you're actually staring at a piece of paper and reading off of it?
I actually, to be honest, I found it much harder to do the piece of paper. That was one of the unexpected challenges.
Really?
Because I'm used to sort of winging it or having a general idea of what I'm going to talk about and then talking about it.
Okay.
But it's you know, a lot of the stuff that you do when you're talking to people, like making eye contact and, you know,
yeah.
engaging interest and that sort of thing, engaging how the crowd is reacting to what you're saying, is a little bit different when you're reading something off a piece of paper. For one thing, you have to be looking at the thing
you're
that
looking
you're
at the paper. You're not looking at the people.
And
sure.
for another, it's down on the paper, so you can't be like, oh, this crowd is losing interest. Let me throw in a joke here.
No. Yeah, no. You can't resort to your shtick.
No, you're locked in, and that was actually part of it that I hadn't really thought about. I should have thought about it, I guess, going into it. But I hadn't really considered that. But, you know, I'm trying to get better at reading in front of crowds because it is very different from talking in front of crowds. Like, I would not say
sense.
They are the same thing.
I would have expected it to be the opposite a little bit, I think. I think it's sometimes, I don't know, you're standing on stage and you're trying to be yourself and sort of make stuff up off the cuff. And it can be hard to sort of, you can psych yourself out depending on how the audience is reacting, you know. There's time for your brain to do that. There's still brain space. But when you're reading off a piece of paper, like, you can sort of hide behind it.
I would say that's true. I also think it varies a lot from person to person. Like, and you can see that actually in politicians and stuff who are doing this. There are some of them that get up there and say whatever. There's some of them that have bullet points on note cards. And there's some of them that have everything written out by someone that they paid a lot of money to write.
A lot of money,
yeah,
sure.
Exactly. So even in the people who are professionals who talk all the time, people have their own strengths that they bring to the table.
See, that's interesting because I wrote and performed stand-up comedy for a year, and after doing that, I thought going up with pages of paper, I thought that was like cheating. It's kind of what it felt like to me. I was like, wow, I've got everything right in front of me. Nothing can go wrong.
I just kept all my jokes in a spiral notebook and just read them out loud.
And it may be
that's frowned upon, by the way.
Insert timing here.
You know, this was a novel, new situation for me, so it presented new challenges. Maybe, you know, next time I'm up there with a piece of paper, I'll be like, oh, man, this is so much easier than when I used to just come up here completely unprepared and hoped I had something to say, you know?
Right. So you and I talked a little bit about this before this podcast, but why do you feel, I mean, I feel this way, that a diner is like the perfect setting for a short story? And I have one that's set in a diner, but what are your thoughts about that?
Well, we were just talking about almost cheating, you know. But a diner is almost cheating as a setting because you can put almost anyone in there and it looks, it feels natural, you know.
Right.
A group of high schoolers, you know, mob hitmen. None of those people would be weird in a diner, even at the same time, you know, eating.
Right,
you know, three tables in a row.
Well, see, there's an interesting story. sit one of those people at every table.
Yeah, there you go.
I wish the high schoolers were part of the mob in that story. That would
Well, maybe this is how they get into it. You know, you sit at the right table in a diner. You know,
maybe it's a multi-level marketing pitch.
That's right.
That they're being given. So one of the lines that really stood out to me, and I think Robert, you commented on it as well as one of the other writers who performed that night, and I'm going to read it right here, was. You said, "Take that, universe," some quiet voice says. "You've given me scars on my scars, but I can tear you in half whenever I please." That was a really cool line.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Do lines like that just like pop into your head, or
every once in a while?
Yeah.
You gotta have a good line every now and then.
Or... Do you see that as a really good line too?
You know,
does that like
always,
jump out?
It's
or?
Always hard to know when you're writing whether it's a good line. I mean, sometimes you get something and you're like, "Yes, this line right here."
Yeah.
And then other times, this might be good. And then you put something in there and you think it's gonna be great, and everybody just reads right over it and
right.
doesn't care. Or goes, "This doesn't make any sense. Why is this here? It seems out of place." And
sure,
partially seems like a good line just because the story kind of revolves around that concept. Like, it's building towards it.
Right.
So you've gone and you've kind of set up a spotlight, or I guess I have kind of set up a spotlight for that particular line. The whole concept is this idea that, heads or tails. You've got two ways you can go at any given moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of the basis for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I think the important thing is that you earn the good line. Sometimes you can tell, sometimes you can't, but the important, I don't know, if the situation builds for it, the brain is sort of primed for it, then that good line really lands,
Yeah, sometimes a great line can be lost if it comes out of the blue, or if it doesn't seem to be in the right context. I've experienced that as well. Sometimes, reading things, and you're like, wow, that's kind of out of left field there.
I mean, sometimes it's amazing. You make one or two small changes, and suddenly things all line up, and everything feels much more natural. And I wish I could figure out the exact process to go through to get to that, because it would make my life a lot easier as a writer. But
if you could map it and repeat it,
yeah.
Be a lot easier.
If only that were possible.
I don't think that's the way of the artist, Connor.
I suppose not. I am really a big believer in, stories are built. Like, inspiration has its place, but inspiration
right.
guards the doorway between a good story and a great story.
Okay.
Not the the doorway between a bad story and a good story. You can,
right.
You have your basic building blocks and, craft to get from bad to good. There's that little extra that takes things and, you read them and then you go and you put them down and you go, oh my gosh, that was amazing. How did they think of that?
How did that happen? Yeah. But,
so are you framing inspiration more as passion, or would you say that it's something else? Because I know that based on what you were just saying, it sounds like it's sort of the fire for a story, right? When you're really in love with the idea and you feel strongly about it, that can push you over from good to great.
And that's a good point. I don't know if it's easy to define inspiration, because it does take many forms and different, it's one of those words that nobody defines the same way,
Right, right.
For me, it's that little bit where you find the right line to take something and really string it together. The line you brought up might be an example of that. Sometimes you get to a place and just seems like there's something that just seems very natural, that thought, that motion or whatever you're putting in there seems very natural and just right. And sometimes that isn't there. I think that's usually what people are talking about when they talk about writer's block, is they don't it's not coming naturally. And
right.
I'm not really a big believer in writer's block. Normally in my mind it's kind of more writer's lazy.
I like that.
You can run up
it's
into
writer's panic.
Yeah, exactly. You run into those moments where you're not finding a lot of inspiration, but inspiration isn't what you should be relying on to create a good story.
No.
Ever.
What is that famous line? I don't remember who said it, but it was something like, inspiration is for amateurs.
That sounds about
sounds
right.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know who said it, but that sounds...
Just sit down and do the work. It's a practice, I mean, inspiration certainly helps, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, you have the setting, the character, and the conflict. And
right.
a good writer can pretty much be given any setting and character and conflict and create a pretty good story out of it. I mean, that's kind of the whole thought behind, writing prompts or those books that are collections by stories. And you find it over and over again in those, especially those collection stories where they bring in really good writers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can see the difference, somebody will take you'll take the same concept and you'll have five writers that do okay with it. And then one guy where you read it and you go, I would have bought this whole book just for this one little, short
right.
story here.
Yeah.
And that's not the difference between you know, inspiration and not inspiration. That's the difference between, I guess, perspiration and not perspiration. It's the work, the time that goes into building
the
skill.
The sweat that's put into it, sure, and the repetition.
And you got to keep in mind that, like, for every good story, there's, you know, 50 bad ones. You try and fail many times before you create anything that's worth showing to anyone.
Sure.
Even though you don't usually realize that at the time, you know. You go through and you're like, oh, man, this is amazing.
You're in love with everything you do.
Two or three years later, you pull it out, you find it on your computer when, you know, you're moving all your files over to a new computer, and you're like, oh, man.
Oh, that?
That.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. There's a really steep curve. Like, I mean, in any skill, let alone in art, there's a really, really steep curve between, like, you know, the time where you think you're doing well and you're actually doing terribly, and the time where you're doing really well and you think you're doing terribly.
Well, you have to reach a certain level of being good at something, mm-hmm. a certain level of skill before you can really appreciate the mistakes that you're making. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and you know, if you didn't have that initial enthusiasm about your own work, you would never get to that point.
That's a really good point.
Right? So, yeah, you've got to have that. You have to think, oh my gosh, everything I'm producing is just amazing.
Yeah.
And then, and then one day you'll realize, oh, you know.
You have to have a totally unjustified high opinion of yourself.
Completely
to start out with, and you'll never be good.
That is so true. That is so true.
The zeal of a puppy. Just go at it.
So tell us a little bit about Cities of the Mind. Well, what is that site all about? What's the concept behind that?
Well, I mean, it started out as just... Actually, this is one of those things that started out just sort of a phrase in my head. But, you know, it's the concept of a story. You build these whole, you know, cities in your head. And it revolved around the idea of stories. And I didn't know what I was going to do with it for a long time. And eventually just sort of evolved into a website about writing and also my writing company. That was a purely pragmatic decision because at that point, everything I had on the internet was kind of under Cities of the Mind.
Okay.
So it made more sense to start building my brand through that than starting back at zero.
Right.
But at this point, it's just a site where I talk about writing, and my background is in science, and I still like to kind of be a little bit...
You're a man of science, Connor Rickett.
I still am a little bit of a nerd, so I've been really delving recently into why we tell stories and the science behind it, and that's been really fascinating, and I'm planning to write a lot more about that.
That sounds interesting. I'd like to read more about that.
Well, you will if you stop by my site every now and then.
And that's citiesofthemind.com?
Citiesofthemind.com.
Beautiful.
So I had noticed that, when I approached you at the writers group about joining up for Spillers or about throwing in for Spillers, it was interesting. Your submission actually really surprised me, and it was actually this story because I had only heard you read one story before at the writers group, and it was a much, much mellower story, much more sort of a slice of life kind of personal reflective kind of story. And then you threw this at me, and I was like, oh my God. Go Connor. Like, I was going to pick... I wanted you to apply for Spillers based on that story, and then this one just totally kicked its ass.
Well, thank you.
So kudos for that. So do you feel like this is one of the stories that you pit against the older ones and go, this one's better and this one's worse, or are you kind of evolving in a particular direction? Or?
Well, I mean, this one was one of the first stories that I wrote that I really liked, that I felt good about. And I was kind of playing games with it a little bit. I wanted to give it that feel of sort of a noir feel.
Sure.
And I also, like, I wanted to play with the diner idea, but I was trying to make it, you know, feel like it was in black and white while I read it.
Oh, cool.
And that's actually why the first line is diner's got that yellow light, because our minds, our imaginations, we sort of have this, like, tunnel vision. You know, most people do. You know, I think it varies from person to person, but when you throw a color out there and make people focus on it right away, it sort of sucks the color out of everything else. You know, when they would be thinking about the color of the table and filling all these details in that you normally would, I felt like they didn't. And it was one of the first times I'd really put a story together and felt like it worked. And I did change it a lot for Spillers.
Yeah, you did. You said you had to alter it. Quite a bit.
It was much shorter. You know, the second guy wasn't there at all. The game was played against himself originally.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
That's another thing. You know, you can't fall too much in love with your work. You know, I liked what it was before, and I like it better now because I had to think of, you know, I had to look at it and take it apart and see what I thought really worked.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how can I take this theme and build it up into a longer and larger exploration of the same idea.
Okay.
And I'd recommend, you know, anybody pick a story they've written that they really like and then do that same thing.
Sure. It's a good exercise, right? Yeah.
Take a story you really like, make it half as long and twice as long, and just see how that changes it.
I think we may have just gotten a writing prompt from Connor. Robert,
writing prompt number one.
Yes, a writing prompt. I like that.
The only way to get better at it is like any other skill. You have to practice, challenge yourself.
Maybe another writing prompt would be that idea of trying to write your story to paint a certain sort of photographic look.
To evoke a mood, for
yeah.
sure.
So like you said, you were interested in, it felt like you were writing in black and white.
Yes.
I actually saw like one of those sort of aged Polaroids in my head when as I was, you know, thinking about the diner while I was reading the story. It had sort of light leaks in it, and the colors were really faded and things like that. That was the vibe I got from it. So.
Well, that's really cool. And, you know, it's nobody's ever going to read the same story the same way, which is great for a writer.
Yeah, no, that is.
Yeah. It's like whenever anybody comes up to me and asks, is a story about blank, I just go, yeah. Yes, definitely.
Sure.
Totally. That's
run with
intended.
That.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's great how they project their own thoughts and feelings onto a story. Yeah. Sometimes they do have to work for you, it seems like.
Yeah, the reader responds to it. I mean, it also opens you up to endless variations on criticism. But on the upside, open, you know, many, many possibilities for what people walked away with. Like, you know, a good story, you can, a lot of different people can project a lot of different things from themselves into it. So it's really cool to think about those possibilities. Have we talked about freelance writing?
Well, I don't know if we've talked about freelance writing per se, no, but...
not really. We haven't delved into it.
But that's what you do by day.
That's what I do by day.
Yeah, that's a crazy endeavor.
It is.
That's nuts.
A world of ups and downs.
Okay. How do you keep an even keel then?
Oh, yeah. You know, you don't really keep an even keel. You just sort of roll with the waves. You know, it's like.
Yeah. You just roll with the waves. Is that what you do?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things. You're gonna have good months, and they have to get you through the bad months. And you know, I'm still relatively new at this.
Okay.
So,
how new?
Well. I've been doing it full-time for almost 5 years. I don't think that counts as too new.
No, I don't think so either.
But I also started from zero. You know, I didn't start from in the industry with any contacts. I started from,
wow.
I'm in organic chemistry grad school, and I don't want to do this anymore.
Right. So from a place of desperation,
pretty much. So I had to start completely at the ground floor.
Wow.
And I wouldn't actually recommend that.
No. No, I can't imagine you would.
Going back and
what
looking.
What floor would you recommend we start on?
Start at the top if you can, right?
Start as high as you can.
Yeah.
As high as they will let you go in the elevator.
Perfect.
That's, and, you know, I made a lot of missteps early on, which...
Yeah.
Also, I'm one of those people that's comfortable with not very much, so I wasn't...
Right.
I didn't really have a fire under me to be like, oh, I need to make, you know, this much money a month. I had, you know...
You had modest.
Yeah, I need to be able to afford food this month, and then everything above that's just gravy.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I think you probably have to have that attitude when starting out.
How do you balance the mental effort of doing freelance writing all week and then trying to write your fiction on top of that?
Sometimes poorly would be the answer to that, but it's like anything else. You just have to kind of compartmentalize and be realistic in your goals, you know, especially when you're working for yourself, and it doesn't matter if it's freelance writing or anything else. You need to have a very clear idea of what you're willing to sacrifice to meet your goals.
Right.
You know, you need to know when you start out whether you're willing to spend, your kid's college savings on, you know, making this business work. And
sure.
You need to have a stopping point. Beyond that, you just need to really be the sort of person who can drive yourself, you know, who can get up in the morning and have absolutely no one telling you what you need to do and then do it anyway.
Just do it, right.
The really frustrating part for me is was early on how much time I spent looking for leads, because you don't get paid for that, and every time it doesn't pan out, it's
right.
You know, there's all that time is
wasted
and gone.
Oh, geez.
And what I started doing, and I would recommend that to any freelancers, is seeking out people in businesses that needed content done, and their job was the lead generation, like web designers and stuff. Web designers don't like writing stuff.
No, they don't. They're terrible
like,
at it.
They just don't like it. But part of their job is going out and finding people to give them money to build the websites, and they need the content.
Right.
So you're probably going to make a little less money than you would if you went out and found the content people themselves. But gosh, you save a lot of time and a lot
yeah,
of stress.
Yeah, you do.
There's just little things like that. And just think through what you're doing. Don't make all the rookie mistakes I did. Read through everything. Do all your research. Learn from the mistakes of people like me before you even start.
Start on a higher floor.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Maybe with some business people on the elevator on the way
up. Yeah, that would be good.
That would be good.
Well, Connor, we really enjoyed your story. We're so happy that you participated in Spillers 2.
I really appreciate the opportunity to get up there in front of people and read. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that. I hope that you will check out future events as well, and that we'll see you around. And thanks for being part of the podcast. Really appreciate you sitting down with us.
Oh, thanks for having me here.
All right.
Thank you, Connor.
So thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Spillers After Show podcast. We enjoyed having you.
To find out more about Spillers, check out our Facebook page at Spillers PHX. That's Spillers Phoenix.
And if you're inspired to submit to be part of the next Spillers event, please go to spillers.net.
And you can check out the podcast website at spillersaftershow.com.
And a special thank you to our sound guy, Steve Wiesenthal.
A special, very special thank you to Crescent Ballroom and to Southern Rail, who's been kind enough to host our podcasting recording sessions.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, everybody. We will see you soon.